Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the digital workplace. From the role of AI in the workplace to the future of remote work, we cover it all. Tune in as we chat with industry leaders and experts. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started in the digital landscape, we've got you covered. Subscribe to Shift Happens wherever you listen to podcasts and stay ahead of the curve.
And it's funny because normally with some shadow IT tools like Slack and WhatsApp, you kind of have to go to them, those users, and lure them in with Teams and say, hey, you know, here's this great tool, let's use it instead. But with them, it was the opposite.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Shift Happens Podcast. I'm your host, Dux Raymond Tsai, modern workplace professional, Microsoft Regional Director, and MVP. I'm so excited because we're here today with Jamie Laporte, a Microsoft Service Adoption Specialist and Office 365 Solutions Architect with a Fortune 500 company. Jamie, you know, thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So I got to ask you, growing up, is this what you envision your career to be?
Actually, no. I started with thinking that I would do design, and I found that that wasn't challenging enough intellectually for me. So I switched into technology and found that that creativity came with that. So it's the best of both worlds for me.
So in college, you took courses around arts and creative design, all that good stuff?
Yep, all the above.
And was there a point as you were going through this realization and that you thought, wow, design and technology actually goes hand in hand?
Yeah, actually, I noticed that right when I started working with SharePoint, doing administration and consulting. It's really underestimated how creative the tech industry can be, especially with SharePoint and Office 365, intranets and all that. So that was huge for me.
What version of SharePoint did you get started with?
So 2010, and then I think there were some legacy 2007 sites as well.
Oh, wow. You're lucky. I started my career even before SharePoint 2001 in... Boy, talk about making it look pretty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard horror stories.
So today I understand you're working with a much larger organization and you're working on a global rollout of Microsoft Teams. Tell me about this. How exciting is it?
It's incredible. It's been a 10-month journey so far, and I couldn't be more excited to be a part of it.
Just some highlights here. How big is the organization? Are they in the highly regulated industry? How is it different than your previous experience?
It's quite big. It's a Fortune 500 company, so global, and everyone's probably heard of it.
So you're currently working on the global rollout of Microsoft Teams at one of the largest companies in the world. When you first got into it, what were the first things that went through your head when you knew you would be very much involved? How is it different than your previous experience?
It was so exciting to find that out right away. They actually told me on my first day on the assignment that I'd be 100% allocated to the Teams project. So that was the first day of a crazy journey. I was so excited. My first thoughts were, I'm just ready to dive in. I'm ready. Let's do this. And it's funny because I didn't actually get access to Teams until 3 weeks later. So I'm dying in anticipation this entire time.
And this was 10 months ago, you mentioned?
Yeah. Yep. So it's awesome. Been almost 11.
Oh, wow. You went into this project, and like you said, 3 weeks later, you had access to Teams. How does a project like this get kickstarted? It's such a big company. Was it led from leadership, or was this IT, or was it just a natural progression of their technology upgrade?
So that's a good story, actually. This was directly from global CTO, like the global technology department. It was a directive from them initially. And so that was part of the reason why on my first day, they're like, we need her 100% on Teams, because they came to us. And it's funny because normally with some shadow IT tools like Slack and WhatsApp, you kind of have to go out and go to them, those users, and lure them in with Teams and say, hey, you know, here's this great tool, let's use it instead. But with them, it was the opposite. So they came to us, the global IT division, came to the enterprise content and collaboration team, and said, hey, we have all these tools that we're using to communicate across the globe with our team. And we heard of this great tool called Microsoft Teams. We want it. So let's get this rolling and get on it right away.
Now, if you think about Teams, right? Teams is connected with a bunch of other stuff. There's obviously the Exchange component. There's a OneDrive component. There's SharePoint component. How did that partnership look like across the organization with the different technical groups?
Exactly. So it's part of that shift again, right? So this particular organization, their team that owned all of Office 365 was split into two teams within one department. And so the team I was on was a enterprise communication and collaboration, SharePoint, OneDrive, Yammer, and a few others. And then they have the end user computing team that handles the laptop images. They own Exchange and Skype for Business. So a part of this project, the partnership had to happen between those two teams. And that was from the beginning. So we worked together throughout the whole duration of the project, and it worked out great.
And was there at a certain juncture as you start partnering, where figuring out who's going to own what responsibilities, was there a contention, and how was that resolved?
So that was before I started initially. They had known that that was going to be a partnership that had to happen. So as they were working it up the chain to get approval, they had knew that that was going to happen already. So they were partnered, they were all in, and they actually had one small pilot started a few weeks in before I got there. And then we eventually expanded to about 50 pilots.
Wow, Jamie, you mentioned there's 50 pilots that's going on. So how did you guys organize that? Was it based on a use case, based on departments? And more importantly, after these pilots, how did you measure success? What were you guys aiming for?
Yeah, so there were 50 pilots, like I was saying, spanning among probably 350 or so people. And that reflected in our use cases as far as three different specific scenarios that we would use Teams for. The first one was project collaboration. Second was organizational functions, so departments and teams. And then finally, workstream modernization, which is your dev tools integration like Jira, HR tools that these party and third-party integrations would then leverage for bots and polling, et cetera. So that was the last piece. And for the pilots, we actually piloted all of these teams as organizational teams instead of departments, instead of project teams. And we know that the way people use teams is completely different for a project than it is for a department. So in a department, you have sharing work from home, you have roadmaps, et cetera, but you're not really doing that core project work together, which is what Teams thrives in actually making it so much easier. So with the project teams, we didn't get a chance to pilot that. And so we kind of, as an internal plan, considered repiloting all these teams as project structured, but at the time we didn't have time to do that. So it was a matter of looking at all the documentation that we had already made and planning accordingly. So when thinking about the success measures, I put together a few different documents on KPIs and things like that. So broken down into three benchmarks, it really reflects our use cases. So the success criteria for those benchmarks were an increase in collaborative work coming from classic SharePoint sites to modern SharePoint. There was a lack of real collaboration between teams because it was so different. And there was site owner training that took up 4 hours that really decreased adoption, as well as a chargeback method on team sites that was as low as it was like 20 meg. You couldn't upload like 10 documents without paying. I know. It blew my mind. So yeah, and I found that out as I got a team site to do a training. And I had uploaded some docs, and then I get this notification. It's like incessantly popping up, and it says you've hit the storage limit. And I'm just like, what is happening here? So eventually with Teams, we wanted to make sure that all of these barriers that has caused this decrease or, you know, not really non-existent, but lack of adoption and collaboration, that's what we wanted to do with teams, was make that easier. So that was really important on our success criteria. We measured that with 3 different pulse surveys when we were piloting, as well as so that's the qualitative. And then the quantitative piece, that measurement is usage reports. And we wanted to combine all of those together and break that down into specific goals. The second benchmark is enabling that teamwork from anywhere. So as a global organization, obviously that teamwork between cross-functional departments and across the globe is challenging at times. So with Teams, we wanted to make it possible to work on your phone, work on your laptop, and not have any segmentation. So that makes you be able to make decisions faster and get work done from anywhere.
That's one key point that you made where I think about a lot, especially why Teams is succeeding, is before Teams, right? Back in the days of SharePoint, I mean, I love SharePoint, you love SharePoint, but the perception around SharePoint is the barrier to entry is just so hard. Well, I got to ask IT for a site, and now I have a site. I need to figure out list and library, all that stuff. Whereas Teams provides that same experience that a lot of people are used to, not only in consumer technology, but what they would use for shadow IT. So things like if they use Slack, right? It's so easy to provision a Slack channel, or when they use WhatsApp, you easily create a chat group in WhatsApp. So Teams provide that experience. So one word of caution we just raise is, look, you want to balance the experience in the governance and policy enforcement, because if you're very restrictive, like limiting the file size of uploading to a SharePoint library, then you know what? Not that people are malicious. They just want to get their job done. They'll go, you know what? Forget this. I'm going to go to Google Drive, Box, and Dropbox.
Yeah. And that's part of that provisioning process is usually like we were in the past, it's very difficult. And there's multiple hoops for people that they have to jump through in order to get their work done. So with this project, I had proposed for like 3 months a new provisioning process that would give you that reassurance as IT that everything's safeguarded, it's protected, there's policies, regulations, it's all backed up from a governance perspective, but also users feel like they're empowered and they can get what they need when they need it. So our provisioning process was to enable users to have the ability to create their own teams. And we had thought about doing like a post-provisioning process where you have that approval after they create the team and get it. Then it would go for approval. Maybe in a week, they would have a manager that would have to ensure that. So we considered that, broke that down, mapped it out, showed them what it would look like. And that still, we were really pushing for self-service and enablement. So we decided on letting the users be able to create their own teams with the exception of consultants and contractors. But we made that happen through naming conventions, expiration renewal, all those governance pieces that Azure AD lets us do. Use that, and that was what was able to get us to that point. So all of those things required looking at, and I wrote a blog post on governance with Office 365 groups, because it's so important to look at your Exchange and your Active Directory environment when it comes to if you're going to use those dynamic naming and things like that. It's reflective of how your organization is structured already. So you have to consider that when you're planning, because if you have inconsistencies in the way things are entered into the system as far as departments and all those different options for the 6 dynamic naming, that's going to look different if you use that as a prefix in the naming convention.
Hello, Shift Happens podcast listeners. I have an exciting offer for you. Join us for our in-person Shift Happens conference, October 10 to 11 in Washington, D.C. Registration is free. That's right, it's free. And you walk away with actionable strategies from industry leaders and peers to make Shift happen in your digital workplace. Visit shifthappens.to to register today. We'll see you there.
You know, one thing I talk a lot about, right, with respect to governance. Oftentimes when people hear the word governance, they get anaphylactic reaction, like, oh, it's a bad thing. It's control. I go, No. The idea of governance is, how do we make it easy for people to do the right thing? Because the old model of governance, exactly, where, oh, we have governance, we have SharePoint governance, it's this thick document and I expect everybody to read and memorize it by heart and do the right thing. Well, guess what? They don't do the right thing because they won't remember. People are not malicious, but unlike us who lives and breathes SharePoint Office 365 all day long, our colleagues in the business, they just want to get their job done. So if they go create a team and now they're a site collection admin and start going and creating subsites and workflows and whatnot, it's not that they're being malicious. They're like playing around, figuring what works and what doesn't. But on the flip side, as IT, we want to make sure bad things don't happen, right? So the way I describe is, how do we make it easy for people to do the right thing? So as you've described, there's already capabilities in Office 365, or if you want extended capabilities where you can manage groups better, you get Azure ADP One. And provisioning is an important point, where not everybody should be able to do self-service. So you could define and specify who can do self-service or not. You could do naming policies. And one key point I'm sure you have looked into as well, and your organization have looked into, is governance is not just provisioning. Provisioning is one part of governance, but then past provisioning. So let's say now Jamie has a team. She's now a Teams owner. How do we govern her use of Teams, right? So she's now an owner. Do we allow her to randomly change permissions on that SharePoint site collection? Do we allow her to invite external guests because she's a Teams owner? What if the project she's working on is highly regulated by GDPR or Sarbanes-Oxley? And then this third bucket of governance people have to realize is, what about the governance around the information lifecycle? Let's say the project is done, and for some reason, there's three or four pieces of documents in there that need to go through records retention. But Jamie, being a good project manager, once the project is done, I'm going to close the project. I'm going to delete the team, which deletes everything. But what happens to those four pieces of document that need to go through 7 years of retention? So that's also part of governance. So it's important for all of us to think about these three buckets of governance. And the good news is, if the requirements allow that you use out-of-the-box Office 365 with PowerShell, great. If not, there's Azure ADP One. If not, there's other technologies out there that can fulfill your needs and requirements around governance. The point being is, you got to make it easy for people to do the right thing.
Exactly. And they want to do the right thing at the end of the day. So it's about, giving them the ability to do that. That's why they turn to all these other tools, is because they can't. They don't want to. They just can't do what they need to do.
Oh, so here's pop quiz. How long? So this is an actual study, and I'll share this with you, and I'll share it with all the listeners on the show notes too. How long do you think it would take a typical organization to adopt Office 365 that we can put the guardrails down that they'll be proficient in it and have minimal troubles? How long do you think it takes? How long do you think it takes to achieve sustainable adoption?
So I think I have seen one of your videos that mentioned this. So maybe it's the what you're going to say is what I've seen before. So I'm kind of by it. But
go for it.
If I didn't know what the number I think you're going to say, I would say at least a year or a year and a half.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this whole study called the Diffusion of Innovation. It was a study commissioned, I believe, by the U.S. government, but looking across not just government, but companies, large companies worldwide. So the purpose of this study is, how long would organizations take to adopt technology organization-wide, right? And it's fitting for Office 360. They found that with intentional planning and intentional strategy, it would take 15 to 18 months. And this is already with intent. So Jamie, going back to our conversation around this company you're working with sounds so exciting because it's quite large, it's global. What's next? I would imagine that beyond the 50 pilots, right, as you deploy it globally, there's still going to be very subtle use cases. So for example, I understand there's first line workers in this organization. I'm sure the way they use Teams is not the same as folks at corporate, right? So what are you thinking about, and what's the roadmap look like?
So as a part of this project, It's rolled out in phases. So, and that's after the planning and deployment, organic growth, and you're in island mode and you switch to teams only. Then after that comes the phased deployment to all of the different markets and countries. And that's still part of phase one of teams because they're using it as a project collaboration tool and Skype for Business replacement first. And then the second piece would be going into using it for meetings. And then finally looking into shifts and all of that with first line workers. But it's a little bit more complicated when you get to the first line worker perspective because they are a company where they have franchises. And so technically, that's not really even owned by them. So it gets complicated when you look at it from that perspective, but they have a goal to eventually expand teams and give it to their first line workers. However they need to do that, whether it's working with the restaurant owners or other things like that, that's on their goal list for sure.
So, wow, that's really exciting, Jamie. And one thing I would have to commend you and thank you, sounds like throughout this journey, you're learning so much, but you're sharing this with everybody. I see all your tweets, your blog posts. Would you say a lot of these learnings are from this project you're working on?
Yeah, it's a huge part of it. So it's been an incredible journey and I'm just so excited about everything that I'm working on. So I channel that through Twitter and blog posts and everything because I'm just so excited about it. I want to share it.
So before we wrap up, Jamie, to our listeners today, if there's an advice or two you would offer when they're deploying Microsoft Teams, be it a smaller organization or as large organization as you have, what would those be? The more specific you can be, the better, because I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going through this process right now, trying to think, okay, where do I start? How do I start? How do I make sure it's successful?
So the first one that comes into my mind, and not just with Teams, this applies to any Office 365 or any technology project. I would say go and it doesn't take long. Go and set up probably 15, 20, depending on how big your organization is, stakeholder interviews. So set 15 minutes and have a set list of questions to dig into what their core processes are, what tools they use, if they live and breathe in Outlook, if they live and breathe in SharePoint, they're collaborating with vendors, how they actually do their daily work, because it's different, right? Every single one of us has different processes and things that they do every day. So those stakeholder interview questions really dig into that. And you can use those in so many ways if you have enough information across all the departments and countries. So when you're planning your use cases, make it individual to them. And you can also use that for targeted training. If they're not using a particular tool, you can target that department. You don't have to tell them, but say, hey, maybe you're using email attachments. Have you thought about doing it differently with SharePoint? So you can use it in the training perspective. You can use it when you're rolling it out for use cases, really highlight how it would benefit them specifically. And I found that that is like one of the most important things.
Sounds like we just have to really go after the low-hanging fruits and really address the day-to-day pains. You know, sometimes as IT, I'm so guilty of, oh, let's integrate this system and that system and let's write custom code, oftentimes forgetting that the best wins and the quickest wins are these day-to-day challenges that our colleagues encounter in their daily work.
Exactly. And I found that one way to combat that is instead of IT making all of these decisions, like we know, you know, the saying that throw it out there and see what sticks. It's actually with this shift of modern workplace, it's going back to the drawing board and going to the business first before the technology. So go to them. And one time I used, if you had a magic wand that could fix anything, that any problems that you have with technology at work, what would it be? And so they're giving you all of these ways that technology could improve their day-to-day lives. And then from there, you're like, well, hey, what do you think of Stream? And then you go through a demo. And if they like it, they think it'll be good for the organization. Mm-hmm. And this is to the Champions Network, if you have other people that you can go to, if you don't have one yet. But yeah, you go straight to them, use it as a tool to plan your roadmap. And everyone's happy. Because usually you can win people over with Office 365. It's not too hard.
Well, Jamie, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. And thank you for sharing your words of wisdom. I'm sure our listeners appreciate that. It sounds like you love it when shift happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was so great to get your input as well and bounce off each other with all these ideas. And I'm excited to see where the future of work goes with all these companies adopting modern workplace. So
if people want to stay in touch and connect with you, what's the best way?
So you can reach me on Twitter at Jamie, there's an extra law, Jamie Law Laporte, or my website at www.jamielaporte.com.
And I'm sure they can find you on LinkedIn as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep. It's just / Jamie Laporte.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another episode of Shift Happens. Until the next one, have a phenomenal day, and we look forward to see you in our next episode.
Shift Happens Podcast is a production of AvePoint, Inc., produced and edited by the AvePoint brand team. Stay up to date on the latest trends in digital workplace transformation by visiting avpoint.com.